हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
We were on 16.7? Yes. Okay, so this is impropriety of the nuptial fee, because throughout here we've heard about, and we'll hear also more later, that many times this nuptial fee is referred to. This nuptial fee means that the boy is paying some money to get the girl as a bride. So then whatever is, you know, worked out amongst them, however much he can pay, however much they're satisfied with, like this. But now it actually addresses it directly. In other words, people are doing it, and means they can do it, and it's not sinful, but it's not considered proper. Does that make sense? You have these things where something's sinful or not, but then even something's not sinful doesn't mean it's actually good. Does that make sense? Like that. So in other words, of eight kinds of marriages, one of them, the asura marriage, is where the boy pays money for the girl. So then, it's one of the ways that boy and girl can be married, but it's not considered proper. So now here he makes the point of the impropriety of it. Even a Shudra ought not to take a nuptial fee when he gives away his daughter, for he who takes a fee sells his daughter, covering the transaction by another name. Neither ancients nor moderns, who are good men, have done such a deed, that, after promising a daughter to one man, they have given her to another. Nor indeed have we heard, even in former creations, of such a thing as the covert sale of a daughter for a fixed price, called a nuptial fee. So he's saying even a common man should not do it. He may not have any great qualities, anything, but even he shouldn't do it. Because it's basically, it's selling the daughter, but you're covering it. You're saying it in a nice way, it's a nuptial fee. But it's just a euphemism for selling the daughter. So that's why it's to be avoided. So, just as they're pointing out how wrong it would be to promise a girl to one boy, give her to another, in the same way, you wouldn't take a nuptial fee. Does that make sense? Right. So this is the principle of that. So then, the conclusion of this section, summary of the law for husband and wife. Let mutual fidelity continue until death. This may be considered as the summary of the highest law for husband and wife. So that's the summary of, means the highest law, means you're taking, what is the essence? Because you always want to know how to connect everything to the essence. Because you'll have so many details, but then what are those details to be seen in light of? Right? This is always the meaning of the summary. The summary means everything is seen in light of that. Does that make sense? That's the important. Because you summarize, see, there's two ways you can summarize. You can summarize this meaning taking a few main points that someone may catch, you know, and then from that, it's very beginning stage that you can move on to. Then you can summarize. That means you're taking a big topic and summarizing down in a simplistic way, actually down to a very simple level. Simple meaning shallow, not deep. Right? Simple can mean that it's just the entrance point into the subject, but the external entrance point. Right? But the Vedic concept is a summary means you summarize it down to the simple, actually the heart of it. So it's the same, it's the entrance, but you enter into what the actual purpose is. Then from there, then you go into, you see everything else. Does that make sense? In other words, it should be something that everything else can be referred back to. Right? And we see that this point is always referred to, either directly or indirectly. Because that's the main point, is that you're trying to create a relationship that creates a family unit that then performs all kinds of duties. And by performance of those duties, then the world is prosperous. Right? And people, the ultimate point, they go back to Godhead. Right? So you're trying to create something there. The nature is that, okay, yeah, then this next point. Let man and woman united in marriage constantly exert themselves that they may not be disunited and may not violate their mutual fidelity. Okay, so that gives a detail of that. It means they should be mutually, there should be mutual fidelity. Right? That's the main point. So, in doing that, then they should constantly exert themselves, they won't be disunited. Right? So that's how you get mutual fidelity. Fidelity? Fidelity means that they are on it. I mean, how do you say it? Generally in all these things they use very, how do you say, fancy terms. This means that they do not, how do you say? Means they're sensual, they're emotional, everything. All their needs are found in each other. They don't find it somewhere else. Right? It means if someone's having a relationship with someone else, that means there's not fidelity. It's not keeping its proper standard. Right? Husband's off with someone else, wife's off with someone else, like that. So this means on all levels they should try to keep it to who they're under. Does that make sense? So it means a young girl would be with her father, and other relatives, then as a wife to the husband, and then as she's older to the son, you know, and that would be like their emotional and all these others. But here also, because it's man and woman, then that always brings up the point of sensuality. So on the sensual platform, then they should be, how do you say, you know, just connected with each other, not with anyone else. Does that make sense? So now, this is done by constantly exerting themselves, right? This is the key, because the tendency is that on the emotional platform there is a concept of that everything is just ideal, that it'll just work, right? That's the aspect of romance. Romantic aspect is just, so you say someone has a romantic view of it, means that it's not necessarily thought about deeply, it's just emotional, right? It's a nice emotion. It's a very idealistic emotion, but it's still just emotion. It may or may not have any logic to it, right? It may or may not have any foundation. So that's the aspect, is that when you put man and woman together, then if the chemistry is good, then they feel comfortable with each other. And if they're comfortable, then they figure everything will be like that. Right? But there's a lot of difference between just sitting together and actually working together. Right? You can sit with anybody. You can sit on a plane for so many hours with anybody. But whether you can live with them, work with them, that's another thing. Does that make sense? So that aspect has to be addressed, is that it's constant work. Because the point is men and women's natures are so different. How they approach the same subject is different. They have common need, but how they approach that need is completely opposite. So because of its opposite nature, then what happens is that the man will automatically think the woman is approaching it the way he is. The woman will think the man is approaching it the way she is. So then when they actually go to act together and they find that it's different, immediately they think that there's something wrong in the relationship, because it's normal that they would do things the way as I would do it, or see it the way I would see it. Does that make sense? But the point is men and women never see things in the same way. So therefore, that's why it takes constant effort. Because at every moment when anything's going on, the way of approaching it's different. And so there's always constantly a reason for misjudging the situation. Does that make sense? So that's the way it is. Does that make sense? So one has to see, therefore, on duties and understanding the nature, one has to stick to that. And even though there may be a situation that immediately doesn't look good, by just sticking with it, then you see that it straightens out. Right? That's always the thing, is that something is said, something is done, or something is not said, or something's not done. Right? You don't even have to do anything. You can not do something and create trouble. Right? Then immediately then there's doubt that it's working. But if one leaves it, then one sees that it's just a matter of definition and understanding. And then it starts to work. Does that make sense? Because the important thing to understand is that you have two different species and they never really can understand each other. They can understand enough to work together, but not actually fully understand what the other is. It's made that way. So it's not a matter of, well, maybe somebody else can't, but I can. It means that they know something. It's like an iceberg. You can only see the tip. You can't see the rest of it. So that's the point. You can only see that much of the women can only understand that much of the men. Men can only understand that much of the women. And as soon as you think you haven't figured out, that's when you fail. Yeah. Going with the flow means that's why you have duties, is because the duties have the natural flow. You know what I'm saying? Flow could be anything. You could have sensual flow, you could have emotional flow, you could have the emotions can be pious or impious, your intellect can be a flow, your ego can be a flow, the nature of the soul can be a flow. All of those are flows. So that's what makes a difference between men and women. Women flow one way, men flow in another. Right? Men go from one intellectual, logical point to another. Women go from one logical, emotional point to another. Logic just means there's a connection. You know what I'm saying? That's all. So that's the difference. From the emotional platform, they'll use the intelligence. And then from the intellectual platform, they'll use the emotion. Right? So that's why when men sit around with men and have conversations, women think it's pretty shallow and stupid. And the same, and vice versa. When women sit around and have conversations with themselves, men think they're pretty stupid. Because they don't see the consistency. Right? The men are talking one thing and then suddenly completely switch without any connection from one emotional situation to another. But it's had a logic. But there's a connection through a logic. While the women will be discussing things that the flavor they're tasting is the emotion, and there's a connection from one emotional thing into another, even though it jumps all over the place. But the women can catch the thread. Men don't. So because the men are looking at it logical. What does this move got to do with that move? This doesn't make sense. The same with the men. They'll be going on one thing and suddenly go off on something completely absurd that the women think is pretty stupid. But that absurdity is following a path of connecting their intellectual application. You know what I'm saying? So one is intellectual application, one is emotional application. Both of them have a logic. Right? In other words, they're connected. So that's the flow. So the point is what keeps that flow working properly is duty and Krishna consciousness. If that's not there, then you can't say that the natural movement of it is actually proper. Because just because you feel like isn't good enough. Because if everybody just did what they felt like, there might not, at least in Kali Yuga, there might not be very many people left. You know, so that's the point, because people restrict themselves and do what they should do rather than what they want to do. Therefore, there's still people left in the world, right? And we see that a disturbance comes up when people do what they want to do and not what they should do. Therefore, there's laws. Laws are to keep people doing what they should do rather than what they would like to do. Right? So the Vedic system is you get the what people like to do as is connected to what they should do. In other words, if you're trained, then what you want to do is what you should do. Right? Because a properly trained person basically will not do anything improper. You know, now and again things come up by association with situation, but in general, then the main percentage of the time they have their duties, they do it, it works nicely. But if people do what they want to do, then it's not very nice. Children do what they want to do. And if they're left to do what they want to do, they're a disturbance to themselves, to the other children, to the adults, you know, to any animate or inanimate object. They're an absolute disturbance. They just go in, they break everything, terrorize everything, turn everything upside down, make themselves the center of everything, do everything what they want, and just the whole world has to revolve around them. Complete animals. Right? So you have to train them to be human. That's the parents, what they do. They train them in the value system that the parents have. The parent has a value of, let's say, proper behavior. And what how that is, they will train their child. Right? So the point is you have to know the field that you're working in. Then you can go with the flow. Right? If you don't know the field, if the woman doesn't know what is the woman's nature, and doesn't know what the man's nature is, and the man doesn't know what his nature is or the woman's, very difficult. That's why the Shastra says, what is the nature? It's not a matter of discussion, it's not a matter of argument. Right? It's not a matter of, okay, we sit down and we will discuss and we will change. And no, by our discussion and conclusion, what the Shastra says isn't right. It doesn't work like that. It's like we can all sit around and discuss, oh, wouldn't it be great if, you know, water was, you know, cooling and did everything, but you didn't get wet. You know? This wetness is a problem. You know? Especially in wintertime. You know, getting real cold and all that. So we want to get rid of that because we don't like this. We don't like this wetness in the water. We don't like this coldness in the winter. So we all sit around. Okay? Let's take a vote. How many agree it shouldn't be like that? Okay, it's unanimous. Okay, so that means from now on, water's not like that. If anybody says it's like that, they're you know, old-fashioned, they don't know what they're talking about. Why don't they get modern? Why don't they get with it? You know, I mean, how long can we tolerate going on with these old-fashioned things and have these people talking this tradition and always being on their face? Why can't we just do what we want to do and move on? Let's be progressive. Does it make any difference? No. As soon as you turn on the tap, water's wet and it's cold. So that's the point. The Shastras are just telling you the way it is. People want to accept it or not, that's their problem. But the Shastras are doing their duty of explaining what it is, right? Because the Shastras are also personalities. The Shastra is a person. It's like this Dharma Shastra, there's a personality that sits in Brahma Loka. That is the personification of Dharma Shastra. And they will discuss. In Manu it says this, Yajnavalkya says that, this one says this. Someone else is Vedanta. And they will say this one, that one. Someone else is Purana. So they're all like this. So they're all these personalities are there. The Bhagavatam is a personality. The Bhagavad Gita is a personality. So it's not a matter of we accept, okay, yes, this person is nice, but we don't like their head. So actually, they don't have a head. We'll ignore their head. That's impersonal. Point is, the Shastras is telling us what it is. So we understand that, then we know the field. Right? That's what Gita is pointing out. There's a field of action. You know this field, you won't be bewildered by it. If you don't know the field, you'll be bewildered by it. Doesn't matter who you are, who you think you are, how educated you are, how uneducated you are, how rich, how poor, how beautiful, unbeautiful. Doesn't matter. There's no mundane quality that can change the way the material world is made. So the intelligence is then how to apply it. That's real intelligence. Accepting what it is and applying it. That's intelligence. Rejecting what it is and trying to do your own thing, that's stupid. That's what children do. Right? That's why they're not considered as mature. Because they don't realize how it's working. They don't see the bigger picture. Does that make sense? Yeah. So thus, So then here, then this is the point, constantly exert themselves, because unless they exert themselves, they make that effort, it falls apart. Right? One may say, no, why? It just naturally stays together. It never naturally stays anything. Right? Men and women get together, boy and girl get together. They're exerting themselves to be at their best, to do their best, everything their best, so that the other person will think highly of them. They're exerting themselves. Right? It's not that it's not. Girl is there. Anything's going to happen, right? If it's something that's to do with somebody, you know, that is liked, or some situation where, you know, it's a matter of prestige or anything like that, immediately she'll have to fix her clothes, fix her hair, fix this, fix that, fix everything. She's making an effort. It just happens automatically. She doesn't care, she doesn't make the effort. Right? She wants to catch the boy, she makes all that effort. She thinks she has the boy, she may or may not. So if she doesn't, then that means that's where it starts to fall apart. The boy is at his best to, you know, do things that the girl will be happy with. When he doesn't care, then it falls apart. So in other words, how the relationship was established, that's how it has to maintain. That's the nature. So based on that sensitivity, that carefulness, you know, then that has to continue. Then it will work. Does this make sense? Relationships are progressive, yes. Why? No, but let's say the boy's or girl's desire for material prosperity, is that the acting principle that held the relationship together? You know what I'm saying? No. So those change. Now they're not interested in material prosperity. Now they're not interested in sense gratification. Now they're not interested in, you know, so much social life or their own personal beauty or their own prestige of, you know, their house and facilities and all that. That goes away. But the sensitivity of dealing with another living entity, if that goes away, then your whole spiritual life is gone. If a husband and wife can't work together, then how is that individual going to work with anybody? Because conjugal rasa includes the other four. That means if they can't run the conjugal rasa, it means they can't run the other four. So that remains. But the goal of sensuality, but the point's like this. The boy wants to enjoy the girl, so he's very careful. His goal is to enjoy the girl, but he's careful. He doesn't say or move or do something that he shouldn't do. Right? So now you remove, but and that makes the relationship work. The girl's happy and it moves along, he gets the sense gratification. Right? Now you can drop the need for sense gratification, but his point of the relationship working because he's sensitive to the girl's moods and needs, will that change? No, because that's a common principle for any relationship. Needs change, but the point is the relationship, the methods of interaction, human interaction, remain. But sensitivity will never change. Sensitivity means consciousness. So consciousness will ever change. So if you say it's progressive, you become more and more conscious. In the beginning, you're only conscious of a few things. You don't know the person, but as you get to know them more, you're conscious of more of what they need. But the consciousness remains. You drop that consciousness, then everything goes. Not only in that, in everything else. So that's the point, is there may be detachment on this side, but there's attachment on some other side. It's just a transfer here or there or something like that. So one has to get rid of the principle. So that means husband and wife can work together on that. Because when you drop away all these other things that are more the material, still you have two persons working together to become Krishna conscious. So that friendship or that camaraderie, that remains. That doesn't go away. So that principle remains. So that's progressive. Progressive means is you have that plus all this other baggage. You get rid of that baggage and all you have is that. That's progressive. But if that goes, you don't have a relationship. And there's a good chance you don't have a relationship with anybody. Because here is dealing on the most closest intimate relationship. So if you can't do that with that person, how you can do it with anybody? You know what I'm saying? Let's say you want to do geometry. Geometry is a higher form of math than arithmetic. But if you don't know arithmetic, you can't do geometry. It's still based on the same principle. So the higher you go, it's still based on the lower. So that's progressive. The arithmetic, then on that you get the algebra, based on that then you get the geometry, then you get the trigonometry, then you get the calculus, then you get the quantum mechanics. It just keeps going up. Each one's stacked on the other one. So progressive means the bottom's still there. Just like rasa, you have the shanta rasa, you appreciate the person. If you don't appreciate the person, you can't go to the next level where you serve them. The thing is that's why duties are there. With duties, you can reconcile everything. Because the point is we're trying to get to the point we're not the body, we're not the conditioned nature, but that is the person's conditioned nature, and that is your conditioned nature. Right? It means we have our conditioned nature, the other person has their conditioned nature. Those remain. We become spiritualized, those still remain. We become a pure devotee, our body still looks and acts like a woman or man. It doesn't change. Sukadeva Goswami still looked like a young boy. You know? Not that he was now a liberated soul and now he goes into, you know, this kind of like, you know, kind of blob or something, you know. He still looks like a boy. You know? So that remains. How that conditioned nature will function in the material energy, what modes of how the particular combination of the modes, how they work through that body will remain the same. The person, let's say, has a limp because the modes of nature are working through his body in a way. He becomes a pure devotee. He still has a limp. When he talks, he has a squeaky voice. It'll still be squeaky. You know? It just remains. What changes is the consciousness. So the consciousness becomes higher and higher. So therefore, if the consciousness goes up, then the forgiveness, all these other qualities come in, so it doesn't matter. It's just the way it is. It's the material nature. You know, it's like you walk into the house, the dog jumps up, you knocks you on the floor and licks you in the face. It's just the way dogs are. You know? So if you don't like the dogs, then you don't keep a dog. But you can't keep a dog and say, well, I can't reconcile this with the dog. You know? It's just the way dogs are. So that's the point, is one can't situate oneself in that conjugal rasa if one can't accept the nature of it. Because it's never 100%. It means the only time you get 100% match in a chart is if you compare your chart to yourself. then you can get 100%. And even then, you find you don't like it. Right? It's still a problem. See, it just doesn't happen. You don't hear of 100%. It's never heard of. Because the point is because of the nature, they're designed so they're not like that. Because if it's otherwise, you're living with yourself. Right? There's certain things in the chart, if they're so common, they don't recommend them to get married. Because it's like sitting with yourself. No one will start a conversation because you're just sitting with yourself. You know? Because a person's different, you want to say something to another person, therefore you say something. So there has to be compatibility, but not an exact likeness. Otherwise, you know what I'm saying? So that's why it's one of the main things in the chart, the signs have to be exactly opposite. They're exactly opposite, then they're completely different, but they're in line with each other. If they're one, you know, if they're only five houses different, you know, or four or three, then they're different, but they won't match. They're exactly opposite. So that's the first thing they look at. If that one's there, then they'll check the rest of the chart. That's not there, they don't even bother. Because if otherwise, then they can't even start a conversation. They won't know how to say it. Just like if you have somebody that you're very comfortable with, whatever comes in your mind immediately comes out your mouth. Right? And the less comfortable you are with them, when it comes to your mind, you see whether you say it or not, or change it, or adjust it, or like this. Right? Of course, you have to say according to etiquette and this and that, but it just naturally flows. Like that. So the point is then if that's what you have to see, that flow is there. But that remains, whether they're pure devotees or not. You go to the transcendental platform, then of course someone can transcend that and work on that platform. But until transcendence, then you're dealing with the conditioned nature. So that's why it's the compatibility is seen and then it works, it functions. And if by duties and by development of good character and qualities, by forbearance, by tolerance, by service attitude, you know, by purity, by trying to remove desire. Because desire creates anger, right? You have a desire, you can't get it, you become angry. Right? So that's the problem. As soon as there's desire, there's anger. And if there's anger, then one is rough with other living entities in some capacity or another. Because one is angry, so you're frustrated, you deal with them roughly, either directly or indirectly, is that you have a desire, so you're trying to get something out of them. So then your dealings with them may not be, it will cause problems. Because as long as they're moving with your desire, it's fine. As soon as they move against your desire immediately, then you're going to cut them. Does that make sense? So all this goes means it'll just get better and better. It's not it gets worse and worse. You know? Because it's just a simple thing. Men are looking for one thing in the house, women are looking for another thing in the house, and that's all. And if both are working to serve that need of the other, it works. So then it works nicely. And so that's the duty, it's just done. You know, it's just like we have to go to the temple. Okay, that means we have to walk from here to the temple. Right? It's just the way it is. You know, we can't make the temple closer. We can't decide that, well, I'll just bring the deities into my bedroom. You know, then I don't even have to get out of bed. In fact, it's cold, so I'll even bring them under the covers, you know, so I don't even have to poke my head out to look at it. You know, so we can't do that. It's just accepted. That's what you have to do. So if it's accepted, then it's time to go to the temple. You just go. You don't think about it, how far it is, this, that. You don't just think. I'm going to the temple. Something that mind's accepted is just done. So if we just accept, then it's done, and those things are on the side. And then the progressive things, developing the Krishna consciousness, developing the purity in our character, that taste for the holy name, those kind of things, then we can focus on those. The other things are automatic. Just like if you have to worry about breathing, or walking, can you do anything else? Like that you first learned to ride a bicycle. Can you concentrate on anything else other than riding the bicycle? No, you can't even think anything else than riding the bicycle. You know? I mean, sometimes you think of other things than the bicycle, like the tree that's looming up ahead of you, you know, really quick and you don't know what to do, or the ditch, or, you know, stuff like that. You know, the other bicycle coming the other way, you know, all these things. But does that make sense? But once you can ride the bicycle, the mind is that, it's just habit, then it just goes on. Right? Then other things come. So that's just the foundation. That's just the definition of the field that you work in. So Grihastha life is a field to work in. Like that. Like, does that make some sense? So there's four orders in which you can create a field. Like that, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vannaprastha, Sannyas. These are the four areas. So then, seeing that that's the field, then you just work within that field. You know, and like you're saying, the progression is natural, that in the beginning, the relationship is going on by all, you know, proper human standards, but material desire and needs and facilities are being endeavored for. So when there's no need for that anymore, then all that remains is the proper interaction. And those things are dropped, and only the Krishna conscious progression in that, and whatever little bit is needed for day-to-day life. And then that's called Vannaprastha. So it's just an automatic thing. Basically, as you reduce the needs, it just turns into Vannaprastha. Right? It's when the main thing is austerity and not economic development or sense gratification. And then your Krishna consciousness becomes more prominent because you've reduced all these other distracting elements. It's called Vannaprastha. Right? And when the other things, the economics and other aspects become, you know, are greater, then that means you reduce the, you know, your sadhana and study and all those other things. So that's called Grihastha life. So what's happening is, like you're saying, it's progressing and all these attachments and things are going away, but the basic principles of how to interact in the ashram in a, you know, how you say, a proper, you know, appropriate way, those remain. Does that make sense? But the goals of doing that, you know, like we said, you're not acting proper so that it'll be economic development or sense gratification. You're acting proper because that's just the duty in that ashram. And the purpose is just so that that runs smoothly, so that situation is there, so you can focus your mind somewhere else. Like that. Does that make sense? Anything else in that? Okay, then we get into a really great kind of situation. Legal Title 17. Okay, so this is within, now this goes into, previously this was, what was it, 16. So this is the 16th topic. Right? So then farther down the line, then one of the topics is the laws that the kings have to adjudicate. So within the laws, there's 18 titles of law. Right? There's 25 topics of the Dharma Shastra, you know, of mana. And one of them is one section of that deals with domestic law. Within domestic law, you get this division of inheritance. Right? Does that make sense? Right? One of the topics is how the king will run his court. And when he runs the court, he'll address 18 titles of justice. So one of them is inheritance. Does that make sense now, how it all fits? Okay, so here. Okay, so this is just basically what's in connection with the women. It means it's much bigger than this, the whole section. Okay. To maiden sisters, the brother shall severally give portions out of their shares, each of his own share 1/4 part. Those who refuse to give it will become outcasts. So in other words, if the girl is married, the inheritance doesn't go down to the married girls, because the father gives whatever he wants to give the girl at the time of marriage. Does that make sense? In other words, the son gets the inheritance after the death of the father. The daughter gets it at her marriage. Does that make sense? Like that. So the girls get it early. So then, because the father wants to see that the girl, when she goes to the new house, because she's going to a new family, she becomes, she's that gotra now. So then he wants to see that the same standards of living are, you know, as much as possible go on. So he'll give her facility to take with her, so that in her own house, she can live comfortably. Right? And so then later we'll see that what is given to her, that is the property of women. Right? The property of women is theirs. It's theirs to use. It's their right to use it. Right? In appropriate ways, under the direction of the son, the father, or the husband. Right? But it's theirs to use. But they shouldn't use it just any old way without that input. Right? The same time is the men shouldn't live off the property of women. That means they cannot separately take that property and then use it how they choose. Right? Means the property is the wife, she uses it for the husband, how she likes to, then he can take it, he can be benefited by that. Does that make sense? I mean, she has facilities, she has money, she has furniture, she may have assistance, she may have all those different things. So is that a problem for her? Oh. Yeah, does anybody want to go back before the storm, or does everyone want to sit here through the storm? Do you have windows to close? Or? By the time they get there, then they're... okay. It's just a matter of seeing which side it comes from, then if we need... Then we need, if it gets really rough, we'll close the windows and lights on. Okay, so... Does this make sense? The money, the wife may have some money that's given to her. With that, she maintains assistance. She has a lady come and cleaning, she has gardeners, she's doing this, she's doing that. The benefits from that can be used for the husband, because that's her choice. She's using her stuff for the husband, because that's natural. She's going to use it for a husband, for a father, for her children. That's fine. He can't take it himself and use it separately. That he can't do. Does that make sense? The woman has ornaments. She has money. He can't take that separately and then live off that. That's for her to use in her duties. Her duties naturally then are towards the husband, right? Or towards the son. You know, and before that, she doesn't have property. It's her father's. And he takes care of it. But then when she gets married, he gives her property. So it's a fine line. Does that make sense? Like that. It's a very, very fine point. Can you say something? No. No, it's just that you started to raise your hands. I wasn't sure it was raising and then going into discussion. You know, there's always that thing you like, oh, I don't know. Like that. So I wasn't sure. So that's the point about it. It means, you know, with that she can get things, give gifts, so many things can be done. But at the same time, as he himself is not maintaining himself with it. Does that make sense? It's a fine point. It's a fine point. Because otherwise she has property. Like the king goes into the queen's part of the palace. She, all those maidservants are her. Many of them may be hers that her father has given her, or maybe hers that her husband has given her. They're going to be rendering service and doing so many things. So he's getting benefit. Her furnitures are there. Whatever other facilities, she may have all kinds of wealth. She's using that to serve the husband. But that's because that's their relationship. But he maintains himself by his work. That makes sense. I mean, if all he does is live in the inner chambers of the palace, then he may, by accepting that service from the wife, from her, what do you call it? From her facilities and wealth, he could technically, you know, survive. But then he's not performing the duties of really of a husband. That's in the ashram. And then what about his varna? If he's a Brahmin, he's got to be studying and teaching. If he's Kshatriya, he's got to be managing. If he's a Vaishya, he's got to be creating economic development. If he's Shudra, he's got to be working for someone else. His wife is not the boss. Right? She's not who he is the servant of. So that means it's not complete. Right? It means there's that idea, okay, the guy will marry a rich woman and then just live, you know, he doesn't have to work or do anything. But what about his duties? What is his varna? What is his ashram duties? What is his varna duties? Part of it may be accepting and interacting that service from the wife. But that's not all his service. That's not the definition of a grihastha. Right? So that means then he has to have, outside of that, his own service. Does that make sense? So that there's a line there. So the girl, if she's not married and the father dies when the property is given up, because he's not going to divide it with the daughter or the daughters, he's going to divide it for the sons. The daughter's already married, he's already given, but if they're unmarried, then the sons from themselves, they give out of their own share. Right? And here it says one quarter. Right? So if she has one brother, he gets three quarters, she gets one quarter. She has 10 brothers, right? Then she gets 40%. So the more brothers she's got, then she does pretty good. You know, like that. So basically this is the principle, is that, in other words, the brothers will take care. Because then that money will go for arranging her marriage and everything like that, and then what's left over, then she'll take that with her for her married life. But that would include her marriage, the arrangements for the marriage, because that's the girl side of the family, they take care of that. So from their quarter, they have to arrange the marriage and everything like that. But what then next? Whatever may be separate property of the mother, that is the share of the unmarried daughter alone. So whatever is the mother's wealth, that goes to the unmarried daughters. Married daughters can't claim it, because they've already gotten their share. So that would mean, you know, their furnitures, their ornaments, their clothes, their, you know, any special things like that that is there. Then that goes to the unmarried daughters. Though, that is if they just die, and this is the automatic thing. Right? If they want, then later on we'll see it's addressed, they can give it to certain persons. But otherwise, by their own. But the automatic, the default, is that it just goes to the unmarried daughters. Right? So these are all the straight definitions. Later it'll be if it's not like that. What if there's no daughter? What if there's no son? Then it'll show. Okay, so now we've said, you know, that this in the inheritance of the father goes to the sons. So it can either be divided up amongst all the sons, and they all live a separate lifestyle, or it can all be given to the eldest son, and he maintains all the younger sons, just like they were under the father. Does that make sense? So in other words, they continue to live as a joint family, and the elder brother takes the position, you know, the responsibility of the father, and he maintains them all. Right? Then it works like that. Otherwise, they can divide it up. So now, then the question is, so then, for the inheritance to be handed down, and the reason it goes to that son, it's whichever son does the Shraddha rites, he gets the inheritance. Right? That's how inheritance goes. It goes to who does the rites. That's it. If they don't do the rites, they don't get the inheritance. Who does the inheritance? Because the whole thing of the forefathers is coming down. So the legacy to carry on the Shraddha rites, that takes money, that takes facility. So that means then the inheritance goes to them so they can continue. Because it's not only the father, it's the grandfather, the, you know, just works like that. So then that means you need son. Right? So now here is 12 types of sons. Okay, among 12 sons of men whom Manu sprung from the self-existent Swayambhu enumerates, 6 are kinsmen and heirs, and 6 not heirs but kinsmen. Right? It means then there's just 6 kinds of sons you can have. 6 of them then can inherit the property, and 6 can't, but they're relatives, so they'll be taken care of. Right? In other words, 6 will get the inheritance, and another 6, if they're there, they will be maintained by those who get the inheritance. Right? They can't inherit the relatives. So this means, just like there's 8 kinds of marriages, these are the 8 ways, means there's not another way to put a boy and a girl together other than those 8. So, but some are more authorized, some are less. Some are not even recommended at all. But it's a method. So the same is, there's 12 ways you can have a son. Like that. One of them is considered the best, and then after that there's 5 others that are considered okay, and then 6 that are not really so good at all. Because what's the use? They can't inherit. Means you can make them. If you don't have any of the first 6, then you start down next one. Means, in other words, each of the first that's not there, then the next one, you know, is the second choice, then the third choice, the fourth choice. So you'd only take the 12th choice if the first 11 aren't there. If the first is there, any of the others are there, you would not take the 12th choice. Right? Does that make some sense? Ooh, esoteric, but now we will learn. Okay. So these are the 6 heirs. The legitimate son of the body, the son begotten on the wife, the son adopted, the son made, the son secretly born, and the son cast off are the 6 heirs and kinsmen. The son of an unmarried damsel, the son received with the wife, the son bought, the son begotten on a remarried woman, the son self-given, and the son of a Shudra female are the 6 who are not heirs but kinsmen. Then, now we'll get a detailed description. That was just overall. First it says that there are 12, then it divides the 12, and there's 2 categories, kinsmen and heirs. And then, of that, now it's divide that, now it'll give the detail. Right? This is a standard way of describing things in the Vedic literature. You first give just a general principle that's there. Then after that, you give what are the major deep breakdowns. Then after that, you'll get into detail. Then after that, you'll apply it. Okay, so generally they describe something in 3 levels. Does that make some sense? The 6 heirs. He whom a man, this first one is called Aurasa. Him whom a man begets on his own wedded wife, let him know to be a legitimate son of the body, Aurasa, the first in the rank. So this is his lawfully wedded wife. That means it's supposed to be of equal nature, you know, that's wedded according to the proper rites, everything. This is based on that. So therefore, that son will be the most clear. The nature will be clear. They will have the nature of the parents very clearly. Because the nature of the parents is the same, then he'll have that same nature. So it'll run very, very smoothly. So this is considered the best. Then, now the rest of them, all the other 11, even the other 5 who are heirs, are considered substitutes for this son. You don't have this son, then you start going one by one down, and you're going in order now, from the, you know, second best, the third best, the fourth best. So the next one is called Kshetragya. He who is begotten according to the peculiar law of the Niyoga, on the appointed wife of a dead man, of a eunuch, or of one diseased, is called a son begotten on a wife, Kshetragya. Okay, so that's Niyoga. So that's what's mentioned about the brother-in-law begets the son on the wife of the brother. Like that. So in the first three, in Satya, Treta, and Dwapara, that can be followed. So in this age, it's not followed. So this one you have to drop out. Just like Vyasadeva begot children on his brother's wife, you know, and then the dynasty carried on. So they're Kshetragya. So they're not Aurasa, because he couldn't have life, right? Because he was dead. Pandu couldn't have children. So he basically was as good as a eunuch. Or one who's diseased, who can't have children. So then this would be followed. But in this age, no. The next, Datrima. that boy equal by caste, whom his mother or father affectionately give, confirming the gift of the libation of water, in times of distress, to a man as his son, must be considered as an adopted son, datrima. So this means a boy of equal nature, that the parents willingly give to them, with pouring of water. That means that's just like the girl is given, then the father pours the water. So same, you give the son, the water is poured. So it's given. Now that becomes that man's son, not the original person's son. Like that. That means because they don't have a son. Or it's just like you see Kunti Bhoja. And Kunti Bhoja and Devaki's father. Vasudeva and Devaki, their father. Yeah. So him and Kunti Bhoja were good friends, very intimate friends. Kunti Bhoja had no, I think he had no son or something. So then the other said his first child he would give. So Kunti was the first child. Right? So she was given to Kunti Bhoja. So he raised her as his own daughter. Right? And then from the daughter, then you get son. Like that. So then in that way then her son would be his heir. Does that make sense? So here it's done through a daughter. It means all these things, you can have the same thing in daughter. You always choose the son first, but if not, the appointed daughter will also, the same effect will be there. Okay. Kritima. But he is considered a son made, whom a man makes his son, he being equal by caste, acquainted with the distinctions between right and wrong, and endowed with filial values, virtues. In other words, he's not given by the parents, but the man says, you're my son. Right? And the son is of equal nature, has good qualities, and there is that mood also between that boy and the man, that the boy sees the man as his father. So he's a son made. Right? Then, kutotpana, a son born secretly. If a child be born in a man's house and his father be not known, he is a son born secretly in the house, and shall belong to him of whose wife he was born. In other words, the man has married the girl, but the girl has had a relationship with someone other than her husband. And so the son is born in the house, right, secretly. Because in the old days, the girls don't go out of the house. So unless you go into the inner chambers, you don't see the women. So that technically means she could have this son in the inner chambers of the house. No one had ever known. Right? No one would know whose son it is. You know, or even in the modern sense, if nobody says, you may not know whose son it is. Right? Like that. So that means secretly. But that son belongs to who's actually the husband. It doesn't belong to the person who begot the son. Right? We went through this discussion. Didn't we have this discussion? Right? It means it's who the wife is married to, whoever child she has, is her husband's son. It's not the son of the person who begot it. And apavida. He whom a man receives as a son after he's been deserted by his parents or by either of them is called a son cast off. So it means the boy's own parents, either one or both of them, have cast them off, and he takes them in. But it doesn't mention that he has to be of equal nature. Like that. So he wasn't willingly given. Right? Or he wasn't, if it's the same thing, but of equal nature, then he's kritrima, right? If he's given by the parents, he's datrima. Otherwise, if he's on his own, if the boy's side of the family gives him, it's datrima. If the man himself states, then it's kritrima. If he accepts him, but he's not of equal nature, then it's this apavida. Then the six kinsmen. Okay, kanina. Okay, so this means a son whom a damsel secretly bears in the house of her father, one shall name the son of an unmarried damsel, and declare such offspring of an unmarried girl to belong to him who she weds afterwards. Right? So kanina. So technically, karna is kanina. Right? In other words, if If he's born after she's married, then it's that gutotpana. But if it's before she's married, then it's this kanina. So he's just a kinsman. He's not an heir. Then sahoda. If one marries either knowingly or unknowingly a pregnant bride, the child in her womb belongs to him who weds her and is called a son received with the bride, sahoda. So that means the other one is a child already born by another man. This one is impregnated by another man that you're marrying, known or unknown. That son will then belong to him. Kritaka. If a man buys a boy, either equal or unequal in good qualities, from his father and mother for the sake of having a son, that child is called a son, called son bought. Kritaka. So we can see is when that buying aspect is there, it just automatically drops it. Just like in the marriage, if the boy buys the girl, it drops it in quality. Punarbhava. If a woman abandoned by her husband or a widow of her own accord contracts a second marriage and bears a son, he is called the son of a remarried woman. Punarbhava. If she be still a virgin or one who returned to her first husband after leaving him, she is worthy again to perform with her second or first deserted husband the nuptial ceremony. Yeah, okay. Looks like has to go through the marriage again. Yeah, okay. So he's pointing out here. So here's the loophole that then... Vyasadeva's father? Parashara. So he mentions that in Kali Yuga that if the girl does not have a child, then if the husband dies, it means if she doesn't get married, that's good, but if she wants to remarry, then it's not so bad. So it's coming from this particular point here. If she's still a virgin, the girl, if she's left her husband for another man, if she's still a virgin, then she can actually, if she finds that second one doesn't work, she can still come back to the first one and remarry him. But she still has to go through the marriage, right? So it must be based on this principle that Parasara Muni has then made that aspect. It means generally you don't hear of it, but I've heard of it, you know, where women have married a man, divorced him, married someone else, then divorced that guy, got mad, and married the first guy. You know, I've heard of it. Swayamdatta. He who, having lost his parents or being abandoned by them without just cause, gives himself to a man is called a son given. So this is where this boy gives himself, right? One is the parents give, the other is the man accepts. Or the man just takes anyone. But this is where the boy comes himself and offers himself. Then, Parasava. The son whom a Brahmin begets through lust on a Sudra female is, though alive, Parayana, a corpse, Sava. And hence called a Parasava, a living corpse. Okay. So that one's number 12. That one's not recommended at all. Why? Means because then a Brahmin begets through lust on a Shudra female. So that means in his house is maidservants, so there's other things like that, and he has a child through them. So that person, because when a Brahmin is mixed with a Shudra, you'll get a Nishada. So a Nishada is also known as a Parasava, because they're as good as dead. They're alive, but they're as good as dead. Because the mix in the mentality is not good. Right? Means Ekalavya is the example. They're interested in certain aspects of the shastras and that for the prestige and all, but at the same time they can't really follow the rules. So they're just a disturbance. They want to do, but they can't do. So they just bother everybody. Well, the Shudra doesn't think he should be doing brahminical activities as an occupation. He's happy to do his Shudra activities. But the Nishada wants to do brahminical activities, but he can't, because he doesn't have the right mentality. Like that. Or he'll be do Shudra activities, but he'll be too clever like a Brahmin. So he'll use the brahminical cleverness in an inappropriate way. Like this. So that's the. Any of them. That's why it's in the second category. Because one, it means it was outside of marriage, so it's not proper. It means they weren't married, so that means the child cannot be of any standard. Because only after marriage, then the child, you can attract a pure soul. You can't attract a pure soul if there's no marriage. Illicit sex always attracts a ghost. Right? It's just one of the ways ghosts can get out of the ghost body is through illicit sex. So any child conceived out of wedlock was a ghost before. Let's just take it like that. You know? So that's why then they're not considered good. So both of these would be in the second category. See, if the boy's already born, then the boy's going to come with the girl. So then the boy already has to know about it. So he sees what he's getting. But if he marries her and she's pregnant, he doesn't actually know what he's going to get. So then it's considered a lower level. You know? So that means it's just this attraction to the girl. He doesn't really know what he's getting there. So that means there's more attachment there. You know? Especially if it's unknowingly, then suddenly we get this kid. Is that making it? Okay. Then the sixfold property of woman. Okay, so now sons have been described, now the property of woman. That which was given before the nuptial fire, that given on the bridal procession, what was given in token of love, what was received from her brother, mother, or father, that is called the sixfold property of a woman. Right? Means anything that anybody gave her before she was married, what was given during the whole marriage ceremony, right? What was given by affection by anybody, and what was received from her brother, mother, and father, that's her property. Now, so that means it doesn't matter, like before her marriage, doesn't matter if it was through affection or not, it's hers, right? During the marriage ceremony, they give it, whether it's just formality or not, it's hers. But after what is given by her brother, mother, or father, that's hers. But anything just given to her, not through affection, but through any other means, that's whoever she's dependent upon. Right? Then it goes to the husband or son. Does that make sense? Because there must be some sense of emotion or bonding that's there. That makes sense. You know, later, because now she's dependent. She's dependent on the father there, but it goes to her. Because anything from the father. So it goes to the father gives things to her. But here it goes to the husband. If he wants to give it to her, then it's hers. Then it's given out of affection. So in other words, it's given to her just out of a formality. People come over and with all their crocodile grins, then they give something. This is some business thing or something like that. That goes to the husband. The husband wants to, thinks it's, you know, a nice thing, he gives it to her, then it becomes hers. Right? Just like if she works, she's living under her father, husband, or son. If she works, has a job, what she gets from the job goes to them. It's their money. No, it means that if there's some situation where they have to, then it might come up. You know, that would be due to poverty or something. In times of distress. Otherwise, they wouldn't. But if it came up like that, then if they do, that money goes to the husband. It's not theirs. It's like in the modern thing, the wife works, the husband works, she feels she's independent. It's her money. It's not her money. It's his money. But whatever she came with and whatever he's given her, all these other six forms, that's hers. So that's where these definitions come in. Like that. then continuing, such property as well as a gift subsequent and that was given to her by her affectionate husband shall go to her offspring, even if she dies in the lifetime of her husband. Okay, so because we have to remember the topic is inheritance. So, because in here, the topic is, how do you say, you want to give all the background of anything to do with inheritance, then you must describe the property of women. That's why it's described here rather than in the duties of women. Because there you'll hear about it, but then you may, it's not currently discussed in relationship to property settlement. So therefore it's given here. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, we've taken from all over Manu that are all connected with women, duties of women and all that, but it's not in the section duties of women. Because it's now in connection with this. Okay, so it means her property, as well as any gift, like notice in here, it's not mentioning that by the husband, because that means in token of love. So it means whatever that was, and whatever her husband's given, all that will go to her offspring. Even if she dies in lifetime of the husband, it doesn't go to the husband. Because the law is the husband never lives off the property of the woman. So when she dies, the property goes to her children. It doesn't go to him. Because otherwise, then he's living off her property. It doesn't matter if she's alive or dead, he doesn't live off her property. You know, just like if he's alive or dead, the wife is chaste. So the same way, if she's alive or dead, he doesn't live off her property. It's not that it doesn't matter. So therefore, it's automatically, it just goes to her offspring. Then that's a gift she's giving him. That's another thing. Yeah, that's another thing. But the general thing is it just goes in that direction. That's generally how it would go. It is ordained that the property of a woman married, according to the Brahmana, Daiva, the Arsha, the Gandharva, or the Prajapatiya rite, shall belong to her husband alone if she dies without issue. So if there's no children, then it will go to him. But if there's children, it'll automatically. But that's only these rites: Brahma, Daiva, Arsha, the Gandharva, or the Prajapatiya. So if it's Rakshasa, if it's Asura, or if it's Paisach, then it won't go to the husband. Because then in those cases, I think it mentions here, but it's prescribed that property which may have been given to a wife of an Asura marriage or one of the other blameable marriages shall go to her mother and to her father if she dies without issue. So it means all women, it will go to their children. But if there's no children, then if some of these first five, because these are basically more authorized, and you know, then it will go to the husband. If not, it will go back to her parents. Because Rakshasa means the husband came and stole her. So it wasn't the parents' arrangement. So they may or may not have liked the arrangement. Asura means she was bought anyway. So that means whatever he gave should go back to her because that was the whole deal. And if it's Paisach, means that he came when she was disoriented or asleep or intoxicated or something. She didn't know what's going on. And then he takes her. Right? So then automatically that also is not overly pleasing to the parents, so it goes back to them. Because that's the whole relationship with the daughter. Because in those families, it's a prestige. I mean, there's huge, large percentages of the planet where the tradition is a Asura marriage. Like that. It's not recommended by the Shastra. But it's there. Because then it's prestige. Oh, she's just a qualified girl that she got this much. The boy had to pay this much together. It's prestige for her and the family. So it's a whole prestige issue. And even for the family giving, yes, we're of such wealth that we have, you know, paid this much for the girl. That means, oh, you're moving in a very high league. So amongst the demons, it's very prestigious. You know? So it's just, And people who are like that, then, you know, they're more materialistic. So then naturally, if they get the money back from the daughter, then they'll have well-wishing towards the daughter and all those different kinds of things. So it's just, it fits the materialistic mood of the marriage. You know, the Rakshasa, she was stolen away, so therefore, you know, it goes back like that. Paisa, she was also basically stolen. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Okay. Women should never make a hoard from the property of their families, which is common to many, nor from their own husband's property without permission. In other words, what is the family property they shouldn't take unnecessarily or keep more than what they should, what's been allotted to them, nor from their husbands without permission. So if permission is given, then they can take whatever, but if it goes beyond, they can't. Like that. In other words, she should not take on their own. The ornaments which may have been worn by women during their husband's lifetime, his hairs shall not divide. Those who divide them become outcasts. Means his heirs don't divide them. Just because the father's sons get his property doesn't mean automatically they divide the mother's property. No, mother's property goes to the unmarried daughters. It may go back to her parents. It may go to whoever she wants. They can't make a claim on it. In other words, they can't just go and divide it. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's just ends this particular part of the section. So then we'll end here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaurakuna. Oh, we don't have much more. Oh. Yeah, we only have a few more, right? Okay. I think this one's yours.